98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up, 2 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Vinny Murata just coming and cracked a funny, and I was a little unfocused at the start of the show, live from the Achin Community Studios.
That Vince Murata is a funny guy.
My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only John Gambadoro, here as we're back in studio after being on the road for the last couple of days. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what is going on? Great event last night. I mean, we packed that place for the Suns game. That was phenomenal. Thanks to everybody who bought tickets, came out, and hung out with us in the Dos Equis Beer Garden with the food and the drinks. And got to watch the great show with Tom Chambers and Tom Leander on Fox Sports Arizona, the pregame show. Great, just a great night. I mean, I really enjoyed it. Got a chance to talk to a lot of people out there. About the Cardinals and the Suns and the D-backs and the Yotes and everything. So it was good. It was a really, really fun time. I enjoyed it.
Really do appreciate everybody who came out. There's no doubt about it. Hopefully sometime in the future we can pull off something again like that because it was a lot of fun. We had a nice turnout. The Suns did not cooperate against the Utah Jazz. We'll talk about that coming up in a couple of minutes.
It was not bad news for the Jazz last night.
No, it was not. Despite, you shouting so loud, I thought you were going to break glass yesterday inside the Casino Arizona Pavilion. It was not bad news for the Jazz. It hasn't been bad news so far when it comes to the Cardinals and their offensive line. Let's tell you what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo show.
Going deep. Today's top story, Burns and Gambo.
On the heels of the introductory press conference for Brett Hundley and Terrell Suggs, press conference you just heard live here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station, a couple things to tell you. One, T. Sizzle will be joining us one-on-one coming up at 2:30 this afternoon.
Terrell Suggs at 2:30.
He's coming home.
Oh, I'm so excited about that.
He is home, actually. Yeah, that'll be fun. So coming up at 2:30, our one-on-one with Terrell Suggs. If you're a Cardinals fan, you're going to want to hear that. The Cardinals did make another move today. Reported this morning, confirmed by you, former Bronco guard Max Garcia, signing a one-year contract as the Cardinals continue to add depth on their offensive line. Once again, signing a Florida Gator. Once again.
It's great to be a Florida Gator. It's great to be a Florida Gator. It's great to be a Florida Gator. You don't know that?
I was just wondering how many you were going to do before you were going to stop. I figured one was enough. I didn't think we needed three.
Great to be a Florida Gator.
Apparently it is if you're John Gambadoro. Three offensive line additions this year, and all three are former Florida Gators.
It is kind of
funny. Yeah.
This is a no-risk signing. They didn't give him any money. Coming off an ACL injury, zero risk, big upside, super athletic, tough as nails. Talked with a couple of Cardinal players today and just really excited about the depth of the offensive line. Just really excited. This guy is a good football player. He's coming off an ACL. May not be ready by the start of training camp. But again, you're adding to the depth on your offensive line. Offensive linemen get hurt. It's part of the business. You play the game long enough, you're going to go through injuries, you're going to get hurt. So what they're doing now is they're doubling down. They've got Corey Cunningham now as a backup, and now they're getting Max Garcia to come in and be a backup, to be a depth guy, a guard. So if one of your guards goes down, I've got Max Garcia. He's good. I mean, he was a fourth-round pick in 2015. He's got 41 starts. He's not an undrafted rookie that you're going to put out there at guard. He's not a seventh-round pick that you're going to put out there at guard. The guy's got 41 starts under his belt. He knows how to play the game. So he's going to come in. So you feel good about the depth right now on this offensive line.
Yeah, and look, that is the key here, right? I mean, because injuries are going to happen. You know guys are going to get hurt. We saw it last year. That depth was tested. And when that depth was tested, Cardinals didn't respond very well. Let's be honest. They didn't have a whole lot of depth there. You hate to go into a season assuming guys are going to get hurt, but especially along that offensive line, you kind of have to assume that guys are going to get hurt. Now,
they do.
There have been multiple additions on the offensive line this year. J.R. Sweezy did not go to Florida. There have been four so far. Yeah, I know. He did not.
It's not great to be a Florida Gator?
Well, not for him, apparently, but it is for Marcus Gilbert, for Max Garcia, and, of course, for D.J. Humphreys, who's not an addition, but he went to the University of Florida as well. In fact, he and Max Gilbert were actually teammates Max Garcia. He and Max Garcia were teammates at the University of Florida. Both came out in the same draft class. It's you stand back now and you look in totality at what the Cardinals were able to do with their offensive line this offseason. And while there wasn't that big wow signing, right? There wasn't that, they didn't break the bank for a Roger
Saffold. Nate Solder last year, which backfired on the Giants.
Right. They didn't go out and get that guy. They did, I think, a lot of what Steve Keim kind of said they would do. They were gonna look for depth. They were going to look for volume. They were going to look for quantity. They were going to try to add as many guys as they possibly could. And they have done exactly that, hoping that if the storm comes this year, they can weather it with the depth that they have.
Well, and I think more than that, it's just competition because these guys are all good players. I mean, Max Garcia, you think he's just going to come in and not compete for a spot because you've got a couple of guards? I mean, he can compete with Sweezy and Justin Pugh and play. Now, he had an ACL injury, and that derailed him, but the ACL injury was, in training camp. So he's had a long time to kind of, get over that. But I was talking with a player today, said, man, these are all upgrades. Like, we have completely upgraded our team. The physicality on the offensive line. And then the thing I heard about Kugler, the offensive line is going to be the difference between night and day. This guy told me, you watch our offensive line. The difference will be night and day. Kugler is just, he's a badass. They're going to have an extremely physical offensive line, a real physical offensive line, and now they've got a tremendous amount of depth. They've got depth at guard. They've got depth at tackle. They've got depth at center. So they're going to be in a really good spot to have, to have 10 good offensive linemen.
Yeah.
And that's what you need in this day and age.
Max Starks, former Super Bowl winning offensive lineman, was on Bickley and Murata today. He's a big fan of how Arizona is rebuilding their offensive line.
I think they've gone about it the right way. I think last year they kind of felt their way in the dark and kind of tried to grab some pieces a little thoughtlessly last year with the acquisition of, Pugh initially, mm-hmm. and then, of course, with Andre Smith. So I think that now they're being more thoughtful as far as how they put this line together.
And he, like you, raving about Sean Kugler.
I think having Max Garcia come over from Denver, who's already been under Sean Kugler,
yep.
He has familiarity with him. He's going to know this offense from Kugler's perspective. Kugler knows how to coach him. I think that's a big bonus. And, of course, Marcus Gilbert as well, another guy who was under Kugler's tutelage at the beginning of his NFL career. So he has a lot of insight into Marcus Gilbert.
When I look at this offensive line and what they've done so far, the two biggest questions in my mind are one, can DJ Humphrey stay healthy? Because he's the centerpiece of it, right? He's the
yes.
former first-round pick. He's going into a contract year. Can he stay healthy? How productive is he when he's on the field? This is obviously a huge, huge, huge year for DJ Humphreys. And number two, I am very curious, with A.Q. Shipley signed and coming back next year, and Mason Cole having been the one steadying influence on that offensive line last year, I do wonder how that's going to play out with A.Q. and Mason Cole. Because Mason Cole was pretty much the lone bright spot along
good,
that offensive line.
But if you remember, A.Q. Shipley was really, really good when he played. If he comes back from the injury, I think you have open competition. Who's the better guy?
That's what I mean. Who wins that competition? I understand it's a competition. Who wins that competition?
I mean, I don't know. My guess would be A.Q. Shipley because of the experience. And he was always the leader of that line. I mean, a good center that can pick out the Mike linebacker and help a young. And it was one of the things you talked about last year, having a young center, not really being in rhythm with the quarterback, not really knowing what he's seeing out there. Which side are they loaded on? Where's the Mike linebacker? Who's coming up in the box? Or did that safety just come up in the box? I mean, you're a center. You got to point all that stuff out. You've got to point all that stuff out. You got to make sure everybody on the line recognizes what you're seeing.
But don't you think, given all the chaos that was around him last year, that Mason Cole did a pretty decent job holding that down with all the chaos around him on the line, with a quarterback switch, with an offensive coordinator switch? And I guess what I'm getting at, if AQ wins the job, okay, because his year was cut short last year with the injury, is there another spot on this offensive line somewhere for Mason Cole, somewhere in the interior? Is he now competing with Pugh for snaps at guard?
Maybe.
I wonder, because Mason Cole was the one bright spot to come out of that offensive line last year, other than, Ibushi, who's now in Detroit on that 1 year deal.
You have to assume that there's going to be injuries.
Yeah, of course. Of course you do.
You have to assume it. And that's where these guys come in. I mean, you know, AQ's coming off of an injury. Pugh is injured. Max Garcia's coming off an injury. So DJ's coming off an injury. So a lot of these guys are coming off injuries. So when Carson took the team to the NFC Championship game, they had a really good offensive line. You had Larson, AQ, like you had depth guys. You had good depth guys on the offensive line. You had depth. You had the ability to cover. Like last year, that was the biggest problem. It was like, man, you're putting these undrafted free agents in. You're putting these guys, you got them off the street 2 weeks ago, and now they're playing. I had to go get Barksdale at the end and play him. I mean, now I think that they go in with and this Kugler, everything I'm hearing, this might have been the best hire of any coach on their staff. Like, this is just, this guy is just, he's a badass.
Yeah.
Like, he is just, the physicality on that offensive line is going
to
be great.
So, March Madness tips off next week. With it comes your chance to be the Arizona Sports Bracket Boss. It's presented by Santan Ford and Schwartz Laser Eye Center. Text the word BOSS to 62620 to sign up. Get your bracket. Compete for your shot at $1,500. Again, text BOSS to 620-620. It was the worst performance of his young son's career, and DeAndre Ayton will be the first person to tell you all about it. Right down to the details. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. It was not bad news for the Utah Jazz last night. They physically dominated the Phoenix Suns at the point of attack. Rudy Gobert was a monster. Derek Favors was a monster. They out-rebounded the Suns by 18. It was a close game. It was 75-75 late in the third quarter. And then
the Eagles hit the three-pointer at the end of the third quarter. Utah went into the fourth with a three-point lead. And from that, they just kicked the Suns' ass.
Yeah, in the fourth quarter, they just manhandled the Phoenix Suns. And Devin Booker said after the game, we knew this one was going to be tough.
Oh, I knew it was going to be a tough one for us today. You know, we were talking around the team after the game. You could tell, you know, what it was. You know, the energy was off. It's not locked in. But, you know, we have to move forward. You know, we've had a pretty good stretch here previous games, and, you know, we have to keep building on that. You're going to have lumps in the road, but just got to keep going, you know, and punch the clock every day.
Suns have been beating some pretty good teams as of late. Utah's a pretty good team. They execute very, very well. They know what their strengths are. Man, they pick and roll DeAndre Ayton to death last night.
DeAndre Ayton. And to his credit, he took blame. I mean, that was the worst performance I think you'll ever see. I don't know that he could play worse than he did last night. He looked like a zombie, like he was spacewalking. There's times like, what are you doing? Like, you know, like he didn't know where to be. He didn't know what to do. It was almost like he had never played basketball before. I mean, it was. It was almost like, I'm going to take this guy that's never played basketball. I'm going to put him in an NBA game. And here, I don't know who to cover. Do I cover that guy? Do I cover this guy? Do I go to the top? Do I go to the bottom? Like, he didn't know what he was doing. Awful offensively, awful defensively. Rudy Gobert gives you trouble. I mean, he gives you trouble. He's long as the day. I mean, he's just long, and he's athletic, and he probably got into DeAndre's head, and DeAndre was forced to take some shots he didn't want to make, and he was missing all of them, and he gave them nothing defensively. Man, I mean, look at the stat line for Rudy Gobert. I mean, he was fantastic. 18 points, 20 rebounds. DeAndre Ayton, 1-9 from the field, had 9 boards, 2 points, and he was a minus 23. I mean, I was questioning, to be honest.
He looked like a minus 23 out there. He really did.
I was questioning why he was even in the game. I mean, I was questioning why he was playing. I mean, they just didn't need to have him out there. I mean, he couldn't do anything. I mean, he was just completely useless out there.
And after the game, I mean, look, this is such a fine line that we walk with these athletes that we root for, that we want to do well. I mean, we want them to, in our business, we want them to be honest, because when they're honest, it's great. It gives us something to talk about, kind of lets us on the inside of what they're thinking. But at the same time, man, it really shows some vulnerability. And last night, DeAndre Ayton was showing some vulnerability with how hard he was on himself after that game.
Overall game, I give myself an F-. This was a bad game. I definitely put this this loss on me. You know, I just wasn't locked in. I don't know what's happening. You know, the shots I took were pretty bad. It was just this is definitely the worst game I've ever played. The worst by far.
You mean ever?
Ever my whole career. Ever.
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 It's the worst game he'll ever play.
Since I was 12, ever.
Yeah, I don't think you could play worse than that. I mean, I just don't know that you could play any worse than he played. I mean, he was useless. I mean, it was 5-on-4. I mean, it was 5-on-4 every time he was on the court. I mean, he was a nothing. He was a big nothing. He didn't pass the ball well. I mean, he didn't do a job defensively. Like a zero. Like, I mean, you might as well have just played 5-on-4 when he was out there.
Yeah.
And that's, listen, they need their big three to win. Oubre, Booker, and Ayton have to play well. And they can win. And if one of those guys is off, their chances to win are slim. And if two of those guys are off, their chances to win are zil. You can't win. Or nil. Is it nil?
It's
nil, not zil.
Not zil.
There's no such thing as zil that I know of. The chances to win are nil if two of those guys play bad.
I knew what you meant, if that makes you feel any better.
Thank you.
I knew what you meant when you said zil.
Nil. You have no chance to win if two of those guys play.
I think you were going for zilch and you just kind of stopped short.
You know what?
Right?
You're smarter than me, so probably.
You were going for zilch and you just kind of stopped short on the show.
Chances to win are zilch. Zilch.
Zilch.
Yeah, so DeAndre was terrible last night. He was a minus. And Oubre, and I love Oubre. Oubre was a minus 27.
Yeah.
Ugh. Minus 27.
It was kind of a rough night. More DeAndre Ayton on the shots not falling for him.
So after I saw the first three shots, you know, that I take normally didn't go, I was like, yeah, this is, I don't know. I won't say I was shut down automatically, but it was one of those where I started, like, moping after every time I seen a miss. And usually I don't do that. I just shoot the ball and, you know, next play, make or miss. But, yeah, today, I don't know why I was so worried about the shot. It was just so off. But to be honest, I'm just tired.
Oh, wow. I mean, okay, that 25-second soundbite right there. Moping and tired. I mean, think about it. Think about how long you've been covering sports. How long I've been covering sports.
You don't get that honesty from a guy.
You don't typically get that out of a guy after a game. Yeah, a couple of my shots didn't fall and I was moping.
Well, we were saying the other day, because he's played so well lately, that he didn't hit that rookie wall.
Well, remember during the All-Star break, he said, I don't believe in the rookie wall. There's no such thing as the rookie wall.
And
really?
We talked about that, that he hasn't, you know, that he hasn't hit the rookie wall. But now as you're looking at it, you know, listen, I write these off. If these multiply and there's two or three games in a row like this, I'm concerned. Guy had a bad game. Off night, you know, moping around, wasn't into it, just a bad night. I mean, I probably should have recognized it, pulled him from the game, thrown some cold water on him. I mean, maybe just, hey, go take a cold shower, come back out, let's see if something happens, you know? Go jump in an ice tub.
That would have been your coaching strategy?
I mean,
was for
just
him
something,
to jump
like
in a cold
ice
shower?
Tub. Yeah, just jump in a cold shower, wake your ass up. Because I'm telling you, being at that game last night, they played a 5-on-4 every time he was on the court.
I'm so glad you're here and not in there. I really don't think the cold shower would have done much. I'm really not sure that's a proven. Did you do that when you were a boxer? If you were getting, well, you didn't have time. The rounds were there wasn't enough time.
Loved ice tubs, my friend.
I loved ice tubs
afterwards.
I don't think the halftime cold shower is the remedy that DeAndre Ayton was looking for.
I mean,
just a guess.
Send a cold tub. Let's just jolt your body.
I think the chance of that working for him are zil. That's just the zil. I think they're zil.
You know,
of him taking a cold shower at halftime in the hopes that sticks this game. That's zil.
I love going in my pool like in December and January when it's freezing.
Yes, you do.
Because it's a jolt to your system and your body, and it just changes everything. So yeah, I'm a believer in super cold water. Super cold water.
That is the proven Gambo remedy. You've espoused it for many, many years.
I'm a believer in super cold water.
Do we have any? Do we need this much honesty from DeAndre Ayton? Do we want to hear that he was moping? Is he not better off keeping that? I mean, we love it because of what we do. We talk about this stuff every day. Is he better off kind of keeping that to himself?
No, because I think that's how he holds himself accountable.
You think so?
I think that's how he holds himself accountable. I was terrible. I give myself an F-. I was moping around back there. I think that's how he checks himself.
Okay.
By making it public, he checks himself. Now it's out there. It's out there. And I got to make sure I don't do it. Because somebody, if he comes back and plays, hey, you said the other day against Utah, you were moping around out there. Like, what's wrong? You doing it again? I mean, I think it's his way of just checking himself. I really do.
Suns are off today. They are on the road at Houston tomorrow. I can tell you already, TJ Warren has been ruled out for tomorrow's game against the Rockets.
I don't know why they're not shutting him down.
I mean,
if he comes back, he's not going to be in shape.
Nope.
He's not going to be able to help. I don't get it.
I think he's basically, not that he's been shut down, I think it's just going to happen, that he's just not going to be available in time for the rest of the season. And you know what? With the way they've been playing the last couple of weeks, I don't know if I'm that bothered by it. to be honest with you, with the way that...
Would you like to get him back so that way if you trade him, teams can see
nice.
That he's healthy and
sure.
he's playing okay?
Sure, it'd be nice, but...
In case you decide to move him in the offseason?
Starting to wonder what his future is on this team based off of how they've played without him, yeah. He's coming home and now playing for the team that passed him over in the draft, infamously, many years ago. What all went into Terrell Suggs' decision to return to the AZ? We'll ask the new Cardinals linebacker. He'll join us next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
You're back in on a Thursday edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, and it is our pleasure on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line to welcome one of the newest members of the Arizona Cardinals, and in a way, we are welcoming him home. He is Terrell Suggs, and he joins us here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Welcome back to the AZ, T-Sizzle.
Hey, man. Great to be back, man. But like you said, you know, I've been living here since 1996. So, you know, I mean, I've only been working across the country.
Yeah. Well, listen, so many people so excited to have you back. But, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is you had a chance to maybe retire and play your entire career with the Ravens. How much of a factor was that in making the decision to come to Arizona?
That was a huge factor. You know, I've been, you know, been there for 16 years, and, you know, they drafted a young man, you know what I'm saying, took a chance on me. And, you know, I've had a illustrious career at in Baltimore, but I just felt it was time to turn the page, and I wanted to do it on my terms, so.
Did you get the sense that when you left the Ravens that you were sending ripples and shockwaves through the organization, that there were people that were stunned that you were choosing not to be a Baltimore Raven?
Definitely. I mean, when you're accustomed to seeing something for so long, you know, you get used to it. But I didn't realize the magnitude until after I had made my decision. And my decision to leave, I was kind of closing a chapter of an era. But, you know, change is good. You know, change isn't always bad. It can be scary, but, you know, also necessary. So, you know, it's sad to go, but I'm very excited, you know, to be Arizona Cardinal and what lies ahead.
If I'm not mistaken, the San Francisco 49ers were also very interested in bringing you there. Why did you choose Arizona over Baltimore or San Francisco?
Well, you know, it was a couple teams, you know, interested, but I kind of made peace with myself that if I wasn't going to be in a Ravens uniform, there was only one uniform I was going to be wearing, and that's the Arizona Cardinals, and that was to come home and play for my hometown team. So,
take me back to 2003. You're a first round pick, number 10 overall, and every right. fan of the Arizona Cardinals was pissed off that. Day that the Cardinals didn't take you. They instead traded down. They got Calvin Pace and Brian Johnson. Going into that draft, did you feel that you were going to be selected by your hometown team?
Going into that draft, I absolutely thought I was going to be an Arizona Cardinal. But, you know, the organization went a different way, and respectably so. You know, I was a really young man in 2003. I was actually 20 years old, and I was very unequipped, you know what I mean? And when, you know, Arizona passed on me in 2003, I was able to go to Baltimore and kind of get mentored into the player, into the professional that I am now. So,
Terrell Suggs, our guest on the Burns and Gambo Show. How long did it take you to get over that, not being drafted by the Cardinals back in 2003? How long did that take?
He's still not over it.
No, I'm over it. It took a long time, though, to be totally honest with you, because, you know, you guys, y'all had a Super Bowl appearance before I did. So, and it was just like, man, I, you know, at that point, I was very unsure if I was ever going to make it to a Super Bowl. So, but it took me a long time to get over it. But, you know, I kind of got to watch from a distance, and, you know, and we got to handle the what if. But now it's official. Nashville now. I'm a Cardinal, so
yeah,
it all worked out.
It did indeed. Terrell Suggs, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, newest member of the Arizona Cardinals. So let's you look at your stats from a year ago. You look at your stats from the last few years. You watch these games. You see you play. It's obvious you still have gas in the tank. How do you feel right now? How much gas do you feel like you still have in the tank after a long and illustrious career in this league?
Well, you know, it's very exciting. It's funny how a breath of fresh air can kind of revive you. You know what I'm saying? So, as you said, I do have gas left in this tank, and I guess we're going to find out just how much in the upcoming future here.
I think a lot of people are excited about, look, you're an alpha male. You're a leader. I mean, you're a born leader. And coming into this team, I know you're not going to, you know, you're not just coming here for just one or two final years of your career and then go off into the sunset. You're coming to win. You're coming to hopefully change the culture a little bit, too, because this team needs leaders. Talk about that. I mean, how will it be easy for you being a leader in Baltimore for 16 years? Is it going to be easy for you to come here to a new team and be a leader right away?
I wouldn't use that word, but it's definitely going to be interesting. It's going to be a challenge, you know, just to kind of, you know, fit in with the guys and just trying to, you know, kind of mentor a few of the younger guys and implement, you know, some knowledge. And we got from, you know, now, you know, to the end of free agency to all of us to become a team. You know, we got, you know, the opening days in September, and we got from now until September to find out just exactly who and what we are and become the best team we can be.
Terrell Suggs joining us on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, flagship home of the Arizona Cardinals. Tell me about Vance Joseph. You played against his defenses for years.
Yeah.
I mean, how excited are you to play in this defense? What do you think you can do in this defense?
I'm very excited. You know, obviously be playing with a Vance Joseph, you know, led defense, but also, you know, with a lockdown corner like Patrick Peterson. You know, we got DJ back, and not only that, to play on the opposite side of one of the best pass rushers in the league right now. It's going to be very exciting to see. So we just, like I said, we got work to do. We're on the ground floor, and we just going to be working, man. Going to go to work and becoming a team.
What is of your legacy in Baltimore? What is it that you are the most proud of outside, of course, the Super Bowl championship?
I would just have to say the professional that I've become being there, you know, the player I've become being there. Just I did a lot of growing. Like I said, when I left college, I was a very young kid, you know what I'm saying? And you couldn't ask for a better leader and better leaders in that organization and in that locker room as a first-class organization. So they molded me into the man you see here today, and I was very flattered and honored to have been there 16 years.
Did you give them an opportunity to match any offer that was coming your way in free agency or no?
Absolutely. I gave them, you know, it's part of the business, but, you know, money wasn't a factor to leave. You know what I'm saying? It was a lot of things that involved my decision to come home and play. So it was just I just figured it was the best thing to do for my family. You know, like I said, my mother's here, so she won't she'll have the opportunity to see me play. You know, my whole family's here. It's just a lot of things went into that. Like I said, I think at the end of the day, it was just time to turn the page, and I wanted to do it on my terms.
But I think that's interesting, and that's respectful. So you spent 16 years there to give them, hey, one chance, you know, I got to give you an opportunity to match the offer if you want. I mean, at least you gave them that chance.
Absolutely. You know, like I said, this thing had nothing to do with money. It was more about love. And like I said, you know, I will always, you know, love that organization, love that city, love that team. And I just thought it was the appropriate time. The best thing to do was to kind of turn the page and walk away on my own merit.
Back in those days, it was tough to be a Cardinals fan. I mean, back when you were in high school at Hamilton, back when you were at ASU, those were not easy days. Were you a full-blooded, diehard Cardinals fan even back then and had dreams of playing for the Cardinals when you were a kid at Hamilton or a kid at ASU?
Nah, I didn't. I wasn't a really big Cardinals fan then. I became a really big Cardinals fan when they were drafting at 6, and I was projected to come here. So, let's just get that
out. That's when you were a Cardinals fan, yeah?
Yeah. I grew up a Minnesota Vikings fan, so. But like I said, and then, you know, they got to the new uniforms, and I was like, oh, okay. So that really opened my eyes to.
Did you think about Todd Heap at all in making this decision? Todd played all those years, was, you know, a legend in Baltimore, and then he came home and finished out his career with the Arizona Cardinals. Did that cross your mind at any point?
No, that didn't. You know, I was aware that, you know, Todd had a similar path. You know what I'm saying? But that didn't really cross my mind way much into my decision to come home.
Yeah, well, Terrell, we appreciate the time. Congratulations on being home. Thanks for coming on with us for a few minutes. You know, we appreciate it. I know we'll catch up with you at some point in the future, and congratulations on the contract.
Thank you.
That is Terrell Suggs joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline, Coulter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. He is going to be a lot of fun to cover this year.
Can we just go play tackle football like at 3? Can we take a break?
You want
to? I mean, honestly, after talking to him, I want to go hit somebody.
Wow.
Like in football. Like, not like hit somebody in the face. I want to go play football.
Wow. All right.
Like,
so
does he not bring out the, I want to play football
right
now.
See what we can do. Steve Keim identified it as one of the biggest needs for the Cardinals this offseason, and yet they've done nothing about it. When are we going to get concerned about that? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter Poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
We got Spencer Keatsman filling in for Sarah Cazell today. Spencer, what is today's Twitter Poll question of the day?
I just cooked this one up, guys. Reports say the Raiders have released veteran wide receiver Jordy Nelson. Could he be a good addition for the Cardinals to fill a gap at wide receiver?
No.
23% say yes, sign him now. 46% say yes, only if he's cheap. 25% say no, he's lost a step. And 6% say no, he needs Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. I don't think he makes you worse. He's 33. He's still got a little bit of a step in him.
They are not looking for inside guys.
They have to sign a guy at some point, don't they?
I have warned you over and over again that they're going to sign a wide receiver and you're not going to be too happy with
them. Well, I understand.
They don't like the market.
But they, at some point, they're going to have to sign a guy, slot or not, right?
I don't think they want to sign a slot guy. I don't think they want to sign an inside guy. I think they want to get an outside guy.
Okay, but they can't. Would we agree that they can't not sign anybody? They've got to sign somebody.
I think they will.
Okay. And so at that point,
I don't think we're going to be like, oh my, look who they just got.
I totally agree. Okay, that's fine. But if we're using that as our launching point, yes, we agree. They can't not sign somebody. Then at some point, slot, not slot, outside, inside, I don't know if it's going to matter much. They're going to have to sign a body at that position because they just cannot afford, once again, to go into the draft thinking, oh, we'll find a guy in the draft, we'll be okay. They need to add a body to that room.
You can get him cheap, too. His medical history is not on his side. That's the only red flag. But you can get him cheap for like 2 years, 15 mil.
People are asking me about Randall Cobb. No, the guy's had 5 concussions. Not taking Randall Cobb. I doubt it on Jordy Nelson. I'll try to find out, but I doubt it. And then honestly, I mean, I know some of the guys they were looking at, they already signed.
Well, okay. And if we're going to get into that.
Not they've already signed. Those guys have already signed.
Yeah. Some of those names in particular, they really started coming off the board today in a hurry. Tavon Austin, 1-year deal with the Dallas Cowboys. Philip Dorsett, 1-year deal with the New England Patriots. Not that he was on the Cardinals list, but he wasn't. Because he wasn't. Golden Tate, 4 years, $37 million, 23 guaranteed with the Giants.
Tate was never on their list. I mean, you might have to trade for a guy. I don't know. Maybe this does make you need to go get a N'Keal Harry in the draft, even though it's a need more than, you know, maybe best available player, which I don't agree with doing that. But hopefully they'll have N'Keal Harry rated as one of the top 33 players on their board. And if they if he's available in the second round, they'll get him. But they did like Tavon Austin, and he signed. They did like Philip Dorsett, and he signed.
Dante Moncrief wasn't on your list, but he also signed a 2-year deal with Pittsburgh.
Perryman was on my list, and he signed. So, like, there's not much left. Let me finish
your thought. Matthews.
And that's it. I mean, there's nobody else that I have. They're not enamored with the wide receiver market. They don't really like the market. It's not a good market, which is why, if you look at what the Cardinals have done, and this is crazy, but just look at what they've done, Burnsy, since they signed a linebacker in Tana Vallejo. They signed a cornerback. They signed another linebacker in Brooks Reed, a tight end in Charles Clay. They got a right tackle in Marcus Gilbert. They got a linebacker in Terrell Suggs, a linebacker in Jordan Hicks, an offensive lineman in J.R. Sweezy, a quarterback in Brett Hundley, and now an offensive lineman in Max Garcia. That's 10 players. And I'm not counting DJ Swearinger. 10 players since they picked up Tana Vallejo. None of them are a wide receiver. Nope. They don't like the wide receivers that are available. They don't like them.
But even the ones that were on your list, okay?
Right. They didn't like them that much either.
But those guys, all of them, just got 1-year deals.
Right. No, that's
if they were good enough to make your list, right?
Yeah.
If they were good enough to be considered by the Arizona Cardinals, and all three of those guys, Dorsett, 1-year deal. Don't pay the Perryman, 1-year deal. Who was the other one that we were talking about?
Tavon Austin,
1-year deal. I mean, at least get in there on the guys that you kind of like, because at 1-year deals, you could have made somewhat competitive offers to try to get one of those guys here
on a one-year deal.
It's
a fair point. It's a fair point.
There's no logic to that. Here's a list of guys they liked at the wide receiver position, and I'm seeing three of them go for 1-year contracts. They obviously didn't like them very much.
It depends on what those guys got money-wise.
Well, Perryman got, 1 year, $4 million with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? That wasn't anything at all. Cardinals could have afforded that if they wanted to. You got to...
Any numbers out on Austin and Dorsett?
I have not seen numbers on Austin or Dorsett. Okay. I have not.
I'm curious to see what they are, because, again, those were guys that they... You know, that they were interested in, but again, I've said from the beginning, they don't like this market for wide receivers.
And I'm not trying to chide the Cardinals for not being aggressive. They've been aggressive this offseason, all right? They have. They've gone out and they've done things we've wanted them to do. They've addressed the offensive line. They haven't spent a ton of money on the offensive line, but they're going at it with depth and layers and trying to attack it in waves. They addressed inside linebacker. They paid for Jordan Hicks. They went out and got Terrell Suggs. I think we all like that. Robert Alford is a move we all love. They've done things that they needed to do. It's just this one position that was such an area of weakness last year, and I get not wanting to give Golden Tate a 4-year, $37 million contract with $23 million guaranteed. I totally get that.
Right.
I wouldn't want to do that either. And I get not wanting to trade for Antonio Brown. He's a pain in the butt. But a 1-year, $4 million deal for don't pay the Perryman? A 1-year deal for Philip Dorsett, a guy who is good enough to make your list as a guy they were interested in? I mean, I do wonder what exactly they're waiting for when it comes to the wide receiver position, because you're going to have to do something.
You got to remember this too. There was only somewhere between 35 and 40 million available. You gave Hicks, you know, an average of like 9 a year. You gave Suggs 7 at 16. Charles Clay got 3.5. Now you're at 19.5. Brooks Reed got 2. You're at 21.5. Alford got 22.5 over 3. So now you're at $28 million. J.R. Sweezy, I mean, like, the money's running out. Like, you know, you're down. You're playing Monopoly. You don't have much left. You might not be able to buy that hotel. You may not be able to buy, you know, you land on Boardwalk. You may not be able to buy it because you don't have the money. They have spent their money elsewhere. There's not a lot of money left to go get that wide receiver. And that's where I don't know what the Tavon Austin and Philip Dorsett contracts are. But when you start to look at the deal that Alford got and the deal that Suggs got and the deal that Hicks got and some of these players... Like, the money we knew they had, it goes. It's not like there's an endless supply of money.
Fair point. I just think they're painting themselves in a corner to have to take a guy out of need in the draft. And not necessarily because he's the best guy on their board. Yeah. And if they stick to the correct philosophy in the draft, they might not even do that, which then puts us in the same problem, which then forces it. Now, maybe this is where, okay, I'm going to give Steve Keim a little credit here. maybe he's banking on being the number one waiver claim team all summer, and maybe he's banking on being able to be the first guy to pick from everybody else's leftovers when it comes to adding
a wide receiver. A team keeping six wide receivers cuts the guy who's seventh, and then you get him.
Maybe he's thinking, maybe he's thinking that, look, why am I going to spend $4 million on Brett Perryman for a one-year deal
when a guy similar to him is going to get cut?
When I know a guy just like him is going to get cut, and I can get him for a quarter of the cost. And maybe that's what the logic is over there. I mean, it's, you can't judge it completely until you see the complete picture. God, it was just such a position of need for them not to do anything. They're all flying off the shelves now. There's not much left.
They'd be a little scared because of, like, the Bryce Butler situation. How many wide receivers did they bring in last year? They did nothing.
Yeah. Suns are making progress. A core group is beginning to form. Is that going to leave some players on the outside looking in? We'll ask the GM, James Jones. He'll join us next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Doug and Wolf.